You know, if it wasn't for all the sibilants, I would do this all the time.
And welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 79. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my very good friend,
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis, how you doing? That was a really great job for someone who was just doing the intro for the very first time.
First time today.
First time today. I watched a movie this week. It was called Seven Psychopaths, and you listened to Ray LaMontagne. I almost called him Anton LaMontagne, which does not make any sense.
Oh, that's his lesser-known brother.
Lesser-known brother.
Possibly evil twin?
Yeah, something like that.
Anton almost does feel like an evil twin, right? He definitely has a goatee.
Yeah, don't name your kids Anton, everybody. Everyone will think that they're an evil twin.
So, Matt, how was your week this week?
My week was good. Nothing too exciting happened, but I've been working hard on the music stuff. I have the performance as Panko Stankhole next weekend, actually, on Sunday. So news to you, we won't be taping next Sunday. We'll have to push it back a day or so. But cool. I'm doing that. So that's guitar and singing. And then on October 5th, Amy and I and the other two members of Tea Service are performing at Cafe Bremen in River West. And it's going to be a great time. You all should come see it. And then today I just got back from rehearsing with my other band, Razor Toast, who's also playing at Cafe Bremen. Super, super duper busy with the music stuff. But other than that, not a whole lot going on. Have not been doing any traveling. I did apply for my passport this week because I'm going over to France to see my daughter in...
Yes.
February, I think, probably.
Okay.
I haven't booked a flight yet, but I've chosen dates. Okay. Yeah.
Good. My concern was that you, because passports are taking forever now for some reason. And
Really?
I was worried that you, they've been taking months and months. So you should be able to have enough time in February.
Well, I have months and months to wait. So it's no.
Yeah.
No big deal. Yeah. I should be fine.
Yeah. Good. It's possible I might be going to the France adjacent area in February as well.
You were saying there's a film festival. Yeah. Awesome.
Yep.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what did you do this week, Travis?
This week was a good week. I had a, I started classes, not classes, but I continued to do these, this thing at UCB where they have, for people who graduated their improv program, which I did last year, UCB is Upright Citizens Brigade. It's a comedy theater here in town. They are doing this, kind of advanced rep camp thing, and you get two nights a week, and you do that for like 3-4 weeks, and then you have a show, and it should be a lot of fun. And so I'm just doing reps, which is great. So I did Monday and Wednesday of that. And then, do you remember when I told you about that audition that I had for the national commercial? And
I do remember.
To recap, it was an audition notice went out that I don't see because I don't generally look at them, but I just rely on my agents to see them and submit me. And so I had two separate friends tell me about this commercial that was looking for former Apple employees that were no longer Apple employees. And so I called my agent and said, hey, submit me. And they're like, you're not repped commercially. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's too bad. And they're like, we'll see if someone else in the agency can submit you. And someone else did. And I had the audition, which was a self-tape. And then I got a call back. Actually, they put me on hold for the commercial, which is basically them saying, we want you. Let's keep your schedule clear. We think we want you, right? But then they were like, oh, we'd like you to have a callback. And so I had to go in on like Tuesday of last week, which was weird because it was technically after I was normally done with work, but on this day they were keeping us longer for work, and so I had to work it out with the talk to be like, hey, can I skip out for a couple hours to go do this audition? And it all worked out just fine, But there were a lot of people at that audition, like too many, like 15 people. And I'm like, oh, this is a lot of people I'm up against. So I did what I always do and left and then forgot about it, or tried to, because what are the chances?
Now, you left before the audition or after the audition?
No, no, no. I did the audition.
Oh,
I did
okay, the callback. Okay. Car, yeah.
But then I left, and what I do is you tend to forget about what you did because you can't, otherwise you'll just go crazy with second guessing mm-hmm. yourself and waiting and be like, oh, did I get it? Did I not get it? Am I waiting for a call? If you just let it go, then what actually happened will happen, and that is that I got a call on Saturday that I booked the commercial.
Awesome. So,
yes, that is very exciting. It is my very first national commercial that I've ever gotten, and those can be good monies, depending on how they're used and everything. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's great news. Happens. Yeah.
Yeah. So that shoots this Wednesday and Thursday. So by the time people listen to it, I will have already shot it and probably posted about it. So it'll be maybe old news to those of you who follow me on the socials.
Nice.
So, but that was my big thing. I also did, Ultimate Frisbee on Saturday and had a really fun, sexy gay pool party last night. And so that was also a lot of fun. And yeah. Just
how did Ultimate Frisbee go? Did it go great? Did it go awesome?
It was. I feel like you're leading to something. It was.
You showed me a finger the size of a banana not long ago, so I assume.
Yes, I did jam my finger a little bit, and so it is today finally. Like, it has hurt for a couple days, but without any real external sign that it was injured, like no bruising or whatever. But finally today, it's. Inflated. What's that called? Swollen. To about maybe 150% its normal size. So, yeah.
Oh, great.
But it's all right. It hurts less today, weirdly enough, than yesterday. So I can actually make a fist, and so I'm okay. Yeah. Thank you for your concern.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I'm very concerned always. So, yeah. Well, is that about it? Should we get into the meat of the episode, Travis?
That's about it. Yes, we should absolutely get to the meat.
Okay, let's shake things up a little and do the music first.
All right, let's do the music first. Tell me about Ray LaMontagne. Cool name.
Ray LaMontagne is a singer-songwriter, and boy, he's like, I'll be honest with you, Travis, he's like a lot of these guys, right? He's been doing this for over a decade, and he's really good, right? He got discovered quite a while ago, and he plays like folk rock, and so there is this cool story. He was inspired by a Stephen Stills song called Treetop Flyer to like quit his job and start singing. So I don't recommend that as like a career path. But he recorded a demo in 1999, and he was discovered and has released 9 albums. And I really like he's become like kind of popular on like indie radio. So I listen to Radio Milwaukee here in Milwaukee, and the songs that he gets on the radio are not just folky. They've got like a little blues or soul to them. I gave you a playlist, and there's a couple of songs right near the beginning that are kind of his most popular songs, and those are kind of what I'm talking about. There is, a little bit of that Gregory Alan Isaacoff, like, singing softly and playing guitar thing about him, but I think he's also got something real special, and he's got a little bit of edge to his voice, a little bit of raspiness that I really like, that I don't find annoying. Hopefully you didn't find it annoying. But I'm about to find out, because I'm about to ask you, Travis, what did you think of Ray LaMontagne?
Man, so this was beautiful music.
Yeah.
This was just beautiful. And what's funny is I, listening to it the first time, thought this guy was some unknown gem from like the 70s or something, right? Because he has that very folky, and I don't know that era enough to give you a name from that era that he instantly reminds me of, but he will instantly remind you of any number of that kind of the folk rock singers. And except the quality of the music was pristine. It was like listening to, like, you know how people take old TV shows and they put them through AI to like up-res them, and so they look crisp and clean.
Sure.
You know, and suddenly you're watching an episode of I don't know, I Love Lucy in 8K or 4K or whatever, and it looks amazing, and you're like, oh my god, that's kind of what I thought I was doing. I was like, this is like some 70s music that's been resampled or just cleaned up, and it sounded just. Every part of this was a beautiful listening experience. Mm-hmm. And I did listen to it three times through.
Whoa.
And I did it in a couple of different ways. The first time was on a hike. The second time was in the car. And the third time was just kind of walking around doing stuff, going to the store, you know, returning a delivery from Amazon, that kind of stuff. And all three of them were good. The hike, maybe not. This is not hiking music. This isn't. No, you know what? Let me take that back. This isn't hiking workout music.
Sure, right? Like
so.
Active,
my hikes,
yeah.
My hikes tend to be like intense. I'm carrying weights. I'm really pushing it, and I like something that kind of drives me. This could absolutely be like just hiking on a trail music for sure. But Matt, this guy's voice is beautiful, and there is not a note out of place. And props to you for this playlist, because perhaps there are bits of this man's repertoire that are less good, I guess. But you picked a really good series of songs. I'm struggling.
Ooh.
To to what?
Oh, I'm curious. Your voice changed a little bit, and I was like, "Oh, what's he gonna say?"
I'm struggling to figure out more to say, because ultimately this is maybe not my type of music on the face of it, but. This is a really, really, really good album. And if you if you're listening to this and you're the type of person that likes music to kind of just listen to, you know, and not serve a particular purpose, like it's not trying to cheer you up, it's not trying to energize you, it's not trying to do those things, it's just good music to have on in your ears, you have to listen to this. You gotta check out this playlist, which you can find, by the way, in our show notes. Matt puts the playlist links in there, so check
it out. Yeah, I sure do. So I would compare this to three of the albums that we've listened to before. Gregory Alan Isakoff.
Okay, I knew you were going to bring that one, yeah.
Yeah, because I already mentioned it. And Bon Iver. And,
okay.
And Keith Hampton. Actually.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I see a lot of Keith in this too. And also, what about Illinois?
Sufjan Stevens? Sure, yeah. But this is a much more stripped down production, I think, than, like you say, very, very well recorded. But I think one of the things that's really kind of unique about Sufjan Stevens is the way that he brings in, like, you know, the strings and the other orchestral type instruments into what is, you know, pretty straightforward folk rock a lot of the time. This has a little bit of that, you know, but not that full orchestration. It's more like, oh, here's like a bluesier one, or here's like a more soulful one. But, you know, that's just like an extra instrument and maybe a different beat than you would ordinarily expect. So I would draw a pretty distinct line between Sufjan Stevens and this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah, I really enjoyed the heck out of this. I thought it was just beautiful.
Yeah, it is really, really beautiful music. It's funny because I listen to Ray LaMontagne. You know, he gets played on the radio, on Radio Milwaukee, and occasionally even on more poppy stations. And I, you know, there's a song on here, "Step Into Your Power," that I just absolutely love. And It's a very straightforward message, right? There's no like weird metaphor or anything going on. It's about, you know, become, you are the person that you are meant to be in the world, and you should take up space and be yourself. Don't try to be someone who you're not, right? It's the same thing we tell fifth graders, right? But it's such a beautiful song, and it's played so well and performed so well that you can't help going along with it. And you're like, yeah, step into your power, right? You know, and so it's the quality of execution that elevates the material above, like, the mundane, right? Because this could, you know, there's lots of people who sing about things like this, right? I was born to love you. Yeah, okay, sure. Obviously. You are the best thing, right? These are not, like, complicated messages about, you know, the nature of the universe, right?
Yeah, right.
But he does a really good job of delivering this material, and it's really good. It's really, it is kind of just like a nice, it's like a summer day. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't have, like, anything to do or anywhere to be. You're just, like, enjoying it. That's what this music is like.
The good metaphor. And I think the thing that I didn't mention, that in case it hasn't been clear, this is a modern guy. He's, like, his last album came out in 2020, and he's, like you said, he's only been at it for about 10 years, right?
Something like 20 years, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But,
so...
You know,
modern, not like 1960s and 70s, you know, folk rocker.
Yeah.
I would say
he kind of broke through around 10 years ago. And so that's kind of where that tenure came from.
Got it.
He was, you know, toiling in obscurity for a while and then kind of broke through.
It's kind of funny. There's a song on this playlist called Jolene. And I was thinking to myself, well, how weird is it that, like, two people around the same era did songs named Jolene? And I thought, is this a cover of Jolene?
Right.
And it's not. The lyrics are different. And only on the second or third playthrough, after I knew that this was a newer artist, that I was like, oh, now it's also interesting that he named a song Jolene.
I think it's really, honestly, if I was going to name one big misstep from him, I think that is probably, like, Jolene occupies a very distinct place in American society and American musical history. Like, it is the first Dolly Parton hit, right?
Yeah.
And it's a very unique name. And so to name a song Jolene, that is ballsy. And I don't, like, I like the song, right? But I don't think he necessarily pulls it off. Like, if you're gonna do something like naming a song Jolene, that's like naming a song Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, you better bring it, right?
Oh.
You know?
Interesting. So I was not as judgmental on that, although I completely see your point, and there are allegories in the film world too. Like, if you are going to, like, I was at an audition, not an audition, but a class once, and someone did as a scene the scene from Devil Wears Prada about the color blue. It's Cerulean, right?
Cerulean.
But that is such a well-known monologue that as soon as this girl started it, I was like, "Oh, you're doing Meryl Streep? Okay, good luck."
That's ballsy.
And she absolutely didn't pull it off. This I almost saw as maybe an homage of some kind.
Yeah.
I almost think it would have been worse if it was a cover, right? But
right.
This wasn't. It was a completely different, you know, story, different lyrics, all that. I will say that in the way some movies take you out when you're looking at an actor and you're like, that's, I don't know, Harrison Ford just being Harrison Ford. I can't see him as anything else. And so it might take you out of the listening experience a little bit if part of your brain is hung up on the fact that this is called Jolene.
Yeah,
but
right.
It's not,
like,
if
I just listened to this, right, absent any context, mm-hmm. you know, Like if I didn't look down at the radio or down at my phone when the song was playing, I'd be like, oh yeah, this is great. I love this, right? Mm-hmm. It was because I looked at my phone and because I saw that it was called Jolene and that I had a little bit of a problem with it.
So now, I guess the question is, what if it's a real person named Jolene?
Right?
Like, we can't be like, don't write your song about this person because there's already another Jolene out there.
I think you can, right? I think you can just say, look, that one is, you know, that's it's like sliding across the hardwood floor in your socks and underwear. Like, you know, that's Tom Cruise's thing, right?
Right.
You can't have that one.
If you're not specifically referencing that, just change it.
Yeah, just change it.
Nobody will know. It'll be you and Jolene will know, and nobody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair. That's a quibbling. Now, we are quibbling, ladies and gentlemen, because there is not a lot to be down on for this album, in my estimation. So, I mean, is there anything you didn't like, Matt?
You know, maybe the song. So there's this, like, the super popular songs, and then there's the, like, other ones, and I would say the other ones do fall into that like male singer songwriter trap a little bit of like, yeah, this is good, right? Even, you know, really good, right? But not necessarily something that would make him stand out. Like not the pop hits, but the hits are the things that make him stand out. The Step Into Your Power, the You Are the Best thing is a great song. What a great song. It's the first song on this playlist, and
well chosen for sure. Yeah,
yeah, you can definitely listen to that one over and over again. So, Travis, are you ready to rate this?
Oh yeah, I am. And it's interesting because again, this might not be my choice of music to listen to, but this was about as perfect a playlist as I've heard, and so I'm going to rate it accordingly. This is a 10 for me.
A 10, a rare 10 on the music front from Travis. Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
On a lesser weekend, I maybe would have taken off points for not being my type of music, but I will listen to this again probably.
Yeah.
And I will enjoy it, absolutely. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Ray LaMontagne gets me on a good weekend for sure.
All right. Cool.
How about you?
I would agree with you that this is really, really good. Like I said, maybe falls off a little bit for me towards the end, and so I'm going to give it a 9. I love this. I will listen to it again. I will explore his whole albums, but it's not quite a 10 for me.
Okay, fair enough. Before we move to the movie, I want to ask you about another musical artist, too, that this kind of reminded me of, and I'm reasonably certain you don't know this person, because I never heard of it, but he only came onto the scene fairly recently. His name is Sam Ryder. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I haven't.
I
did think you were going to say Sam Smith at first. Do you know who Sam Smith is?
Sam Smith. Yeah, I've heard of Sam Smith.
Okay, yeah.
I honestly couldn't tell you anything about him. But Sam Ryder has this gorgeous voice, and he did a song. The reason I know of him is they used one of his songs in Ted Lasso in the last season, and it's this beautiful moment, and it's funny because the song itself feels like a cover of someone else, right? It feels like it might be a Beatles song or a Queen song or a you know, if you imagine the Venn diagram of the Beatles and Queen and like the song that is in that intersecting point, that's what his song sounded like to me. And so I looked him up, and he's great. He's got this kind of like amazing effervescent smile and attitude, but his voice is just kind of beautiful, and so anyway, I'll send you a link, and maybe we can talk about him at some future date.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah. So, do you want to move on?
I do want to move on. Travis, tell me about Seven Psychopaths.
Oh, Matt, Seven Psychopaths is the second movie from writer director Martin McDonagh, and it came out in 2012. It is a comedy, dramedy. It's a satire. It's very interesting. It stars Colin Farrell, Sam Rockwell, Woody Harrelson, Christopher Walken. It's got Tom Waits in it, which I don't know if you are familiar with.
I did definitely spot Tom Waits, yes.
Yes. And also Abby Cornish shows up, who is a lovely young actress. And this is his follow-up to In Bruges, and it is basically a meta commentary about a writer, a Hollywood screenwriter, trying to write a follow-up to his indie darling hit. And so he has an idea for this movie, but it's meta because the movie that he's writing is the movie that we're watching, but it's also not. It's, I don't know, it's kind of delightfully mind-bendy. Mm-hmm. To my mind, the plot is almost unimportant, but the short version
really?
Of it,
the plot is almost unimportant. That's a fascinating take.
I almost think it's you don't need to really focus on the plot to enjoy the okay. story, if that makes okay. sense. But essentially, he's friends with this guy who is a dog thief. Like he'll kidnap dogs and then return them to the owners for the reward money. And it's his two friends, like Christopher Walken and Sam Rockwell, are this pair that do this. And somehow Sam Rockwell is best friends with the Colin Farrell character, who is the writer, who is also named Marty Martin. So yeah, super meta and fourth wall breaking. But and it ends like it talks like. The second time through, this movie was actually better for me than the mm-hmm. first time through, because yeah. it does all this foreshadowing, and like everything that they say they're going to be doing ends up happening. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know, I thought it was fairly, fairly brilliant. So I think this is my favorite Martin McDonagh movie. So,
okay.
Matt, what did you think of Seven Psychopaths?
I'm going to make a really bold statement. I would say... Mm-hmm. This is the movie that I liked the least that I would like to watch again. Because I agree with you that I think a second watch of this movie would be really illuminating and I would like it a lot better. I mean, I did pick up pretty early on that they were going to do the things that they were talking about. But it's hard to keep track, you know, when things uh-huh. are just sort of casually mentioned and then you're like, oh yeah, okay. I've gotta go back in my brain and figure out what the heck they're talking about. And there's a bunch of Chekhov's guns in this movie, and you know, mm-hmm. like for instance, like the flare gun, right, which seems unimportant at first but ends up being like a critical plot point, so on and so forth.
Yes.
On down the line. Right. That being said, right, like I did not love this movie. I actually had to watch it in two sessions. Like I was watching it and I was just like not getting into it at all, right?
Huh.
And so I took like you know, I slept, right, and then got up in the morning and watched the rest of it. And I liked it better having had some sleep, because I think it does really demand focus. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think how I feel about that. I'm not super into having to like really pay attention in order to decode a movie. And you, that's one of the things that you love. Right.
Yeah. Well, I remember us talking about that way back with the Best Picture winner last year, Everything Everywhere All at Once, where mm-hmm. it's a movie that you really need to pay attention to. And so I was worried about, at the time, giving you that when you weren't yeah. seeing it in like a theater setting.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely a movie that benefits from a theater setting where you know, you're not bringing out your phone to check on mm-hmm. it. You're not like worrying about other things that are going around in the house. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So I'm not sure exactly what to say about this though. I obviously had a little bit of a tough time about it, which is why I'm struggling to come up with things to say. The Sam Rockwell character is really tough, right? Because the idea is that he's supposed to be friends with the screenwriter, but then he's also two of the psychopaths, and he's kind of a loose cannon jerk. It's not at all clear why the screenwriter would be friends with him.
That there is was the question, the only question that I asked myself during this whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he's there because he has to be there for the plot to work or for the movie to work, you know, and that's not very satisfying to me.
Well, it does, you know, that's a similar thing that we ran into with Martin McDonagh's in Bruges, was there are people who do things because the plot, the script tells them to do them.
Yeah.
It's
not very naturalistic, is it?
No, it's not. It's a farce. I think this movie is a bit of a, not maybe a farce or a satire, but it's not written to be realistic. In fact, all the threads that come together, like the stories that you hear, like he's trying to come up with these seven psychopaths and some of the psychopaths are like, he hears a story about this guy who kills a Quaker's daughter and the Quaker stalks the guy through until he slits his own throat. And then the Quaker slits his own throat. And then you learn that one of the characters that we've been following this whole time in the real world is the Quaker. And that, like, the other story that we heard about a guy and his black wife going on a rampage and killing killers is also real. And, you know, but I like how it kind of weaves all those threads together in a kind of like a, I don't know, to me it was very entertaining.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're the kind of person that likes puzzling a movie together, I think there's a lot to enjoy here. The problem for me was there's a lot of like clue dropping in the first half hour, 45 minutes of this movie. But there's also like a lot of timeline jumping and, okay, well, now we're inside the script and now we're in the real world. And like he does an okay job of delineating that stuff. But there is just a lot of out of context information presented to you that you have to like take in and hope that you're going to get paid off later. And you do. But I don't love that process of like sort of just being fed this stuff that I am hopefully going to figure out later, right?
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. It feels like, this actually feels like in its structure, similar to like a Pulp Fiction type of thing. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. And I loved Pulp Fiction when I was in high school. That's a little bit of a dig, right?
Yeah, well, that raises the question, how do you feel about it now?
I do not love Pulp Fiction now, and there's a few reasons why. I think it's very impressed with itself, right? Mm. There is just this, you know, air of, like, look what I can do about the whole thing that I don't really love. And then and actually, this movie suffers from it as well. There's a lot of trying to, like, I think we've maybe talked about the idea of you can't bank shot being a jerk before. I might have used a swear word in the past, but
no, remind me what you mean by that.
So what it means is, like, people who are in positions of privilege will sometimes pretend to say something sexist or racist or something like that, and then there's like a wink and a nudge and I don't really feel that way type of thing. And that's great, right? But you can't really bank shot that stuff because you don't really know your audience. And ultimately, like when you're saying that those things, you know, you're still saying them, right? And so, you know, I learned to stop making those types of jokes when I was in my mid-20s. Which is maybe too late, but, you know, there is a, certainly the Sam Rockwell character is just an atrocious human being, and there's a bunch of, like, homophobic slurs thrown around, and sexism, and there's this thing that Martin McDonagh does where he winks about the fact that he can't write female characters and can't give them plot things to do. But he also doesn't write female characters with plot things to do. And
true. Yeah. But don't you think, like, if that's simply a thing, well, I don't know. I think that our next movie might assuage that fear a little bit, just because its main protagonist is a woman. And I think he takes that concern and really takes it to heart in his writing. Maybe we'll see. But I don't know. I don't have the same issue with a character being despicable, because there are despicable people in the world. You can't right. just expect.
I mean, I think actually the example of the women thing is really, really indicative of what I'm talking about, because he does mm-hmm. this thing where one of the characters gives him a hard time about the fact that he can't write women and they just get killed. Right. And so he acknowledges this dynamic. Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, great. He's enlightened. He's acknowledging the dynamic, but he doesn't actually change the dynamic. Right. And so then it's just sort of an acknowledgement that you're kind of bad at your job. Right. Which is to write movies about people, you know, and women are people. So.
Right. I will say that, I mean, although she does get killed, I thought the Christopher Walken's wife gets a really good moment in this movie that, I don't know, I thought she was almost badass in her own way, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I speaking of Christopher Walken, man, I don't know. I really adored his performance in this. Mm-hmm. I thought his, like, kind of... He's being Christopher Walken because he can't not be, because he's not trying to do a character, I don't think. He just is so distinctive. And but like his distinctiveness worked so well in this mm-hmm. movie
yeah.
that I thought it made it very interesting. Like there's this moment where Colin Farrell is retelling the story about the Quaker and Christopher Walken's character is the Quaker, but doesn't, like, nobody knows, like, Colin Farrell's character doesn't know it until in the middle of the story, Christopher Walken kind of unties his cravat and shows him the scar yeah. across his neck, and Colin Farrell's like, oh, holy shit, and, like, Sam Rockwell runs up and goes, no, don't tell that story, that's, you know, he's like, that's the guy, and then Christopher Walken's like, no, I want to know how it ends.
Yeah.
And it's like just such a beautiful, I don't know, fun thing. I don't know. It was great. There was another moment where he had later in the movie that I just, where the guy tells him to like, he put his hands up. He has a shotgun aimed at him. He's like, put up your hands. He's like, no. What? No, but I have a gun. I don't care. It's just, I love it. Just so simple. Anyway.
Yeah. No, stuff like that was really, really good. Yeah, there is a lot to enjoy here. Woody Harrelson is doing Woody Harrelson things, which I think is really fun. I mean, the cast
Woody Harrelson's, like, his transition from Woody on Cheers to stuff like this is kind of amazing to me.
Well, sure, but, like, that's known by now, right? You know, when White Man Can't Jump came out, we were like, what's going on here? But he was really good, and he proved over and over again through the 90s that he was well past the actor who had done Cheers, you know?
Sure, I think, you're right. And Woody, to play Woody on Cheers required a very skilled actor, a skilled comic actor, but then also just... on a wider scale. And comedy is hard. So, you know, generally people who are really good at comedy are pretty good at other things. But I don't know, to see his transition into things like, you know, you said White Man Can't Jump, but that's a fairly standard role for him. I would say looking into, what was the one he did where he was, I mean, he did Natural Born Killers. He did...
Yeah, Natural Born Killers, I think, is the one where everybody was like, oh, gosh, wow, I can't believe that that you would even cast Woody Harrelson in this, much less him being right. good at it.
Yeah. He did that Zombieland, which was, he was also kind of funny, but also badass, and like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So this version of Woody Harrelson is the kingpin, by the way, this mob kingpin, this mafia kingpin character who loves his dog so much that he's willing to like put his own life at risk for this dog. Mm-hmm. Which is great. I love that kind of character. So
yeah.
The music is by a gentleman by the name of Carter Burwell. And the only thing, the reason I find him interesting is that he did a movie called, which was one of my favorite albums, not albums, but favorite soundtracks way back when, called, I just had it in my head. It's called Conspiracy Theory. Did he do Conspiracy Theory? Wait a minute. Now that I'm looking at it, I'm not sure that I'm thinking of the right person. You might have to cut this whole bit. Oh, yes. Yes, he did Conspiracy Theory. And it's just a great album that I love. So it was cool for me to see his touch on this movie, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
very cool. I did want to say this is a really well-shot movie. I mean, just like in Bruges. Oh, it's also a thing that is shared with in Bruges. The characters who have some sort of deathly injury but somehow yes. manage to keep acting afterwards, that is also true in this movie. I guess we just have to accept that when it comes to Martin McDonagh, the people aren't going to die until he tells them to die.
Maybe. I think, yes, that might end here. And are we both thinking of Woody Harrelson? Is there another case in this movie that does that?
Sam Rockwell gets shot in the head and...
And
cuddles
yes.
the dog and smiles and
yes, yes, right in the forehead. He takes a bullet and still manages to yes, exactly. I was like, that is a weird thing in this movie, and I think he kind of does away with that after this. So
all right,
his next movie is I think much more grounded. So we'll see, or we won't. Would you care to give this movie a rating? Are you ready for such?
Am I ready to give it a rating? You know, it's funny, Travis. I mean, when I stopped, and my first watch of this movie, I probably would have given it a 2 or 3. I did like it quite a bit better, in the morning. Not enough to really like love it though. Maybe this is a 5.
Ooh.
Maybe a 6.
A 5, huh?
Maybe a 6. Yeah, you know what? This is a 6 for me. I think
okay.
I think if I had invested you know what? I'm sure that if I watched this movie again, I would like it better. So I'm going to give it a 6 on the basis of that.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I definitely liked it better the second time and found it really delightful. I wonder if it's worth probably not a 10, because I don't think it's a perfect movie, but I almost want to give it a 9.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go with a 9 on this one.
All right. Yeah. A pretty positive day overall. Oh, I want to say I looked up Carter Burwell. He's also kind of the Coen brothers' sort of default composer.
Yeah, he did Big Lebowski and
so a bunch of them. Raising Arizona and Blood Simple and what else? Just a
he's
bunch
got a
of
very unique
Hudsucker
sound.
Proxy.
Yep.
Yeah, a whole bunch of Coen brothers things.
Yes, he's certainly done a bunch, and so but it was just hit that one album that I ended up liking so much that the kind of music that I bought the soundtrack for Conspiracy Theory. So
okay,
yeah, all right. Well, Matt, next week is our very special episode. What, our 8th very special episode?
Our 8th very special episode, yes.
Which, to recap for people, means that you are going to assign me a band or artist that you haven't listened to or album that you haven't listened to, and I mm-hmm. will assign you a movie that I haven't watched. But there is also another piece of news that we need to share.
Yeah. And, am I going to share this?
Would you like to?
I would like to share it. Yeah.
Sure.
So I am going to be, after next week's episode, I'm going to be taking a step back from the podcast. We're going to go on hiatus for a little while. I don't know how long the hiatus is going to be. It might be forever. It might be for just a little bit. We would certainly love to hear from you if you have listened to our podcast over the last 2 years. If you could reach out and just say hi and let us know, you know, how you feel about it. That would,
yeah.
That would really help us.
Is it worth doing more of?
Is it worth doing more of?
Yeah. Do you want more of this thing that we do? And also, do us a favor, and now's a great time for you to share the podcast with your friends. If you do enjoy listening to it, just post an episode, one of your favorites. I think this has been an interesting episode, but post one of your favorites and let your friends know that this is a fun show to listen to and expose themselves to new movies or music.
So yeah, for sure, appreciate for that. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But with that in mind, what do you have for me for next week for our very special episode?
For next week, I thought, okay, well, I would like to look at what are considered the best albums of all time. And there's a few different publications that have published a list. NME is an English publication that is sort of like, I would say they're known to be like, they're kind of the hipster publication, right? And I am a dyed-in-the-wool hipster. And their number one album is an album that I had never listened to before by a band that I kind of have a thing against. So I'm going to check out, and you're going to check out, The Queen Is Dead by The Smiths. Do you know who The Smiths are?
Have we not listened to The Smiths before?
We have not listened to The Smiths. We've listened to The Beths.
Oh. But we've done very Smiths adjacent songs, music, right? Because aren't they a British
band? They're a British band, but they're earlier than most of the stuff that we've listened to. The Smiths from the 80s, and it's jangly pop, I think. Jangle rock, indie rock, proto indie rock. Yeah, proto indie rock. I'm not sure exactly. What I do know is that they're led by a mercurial figure known as Morrissey, who is a very public vegan and also a very public jerk face. And so I have deliberately not listened to The Smiths because I don't want to support Morrissey's jerkiness. But
yes,
so it's a huge hole in my music listening, and I'm gonna remedy that this week.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And so you have a playlist that you put together or a particular album?
This is an album. It's called The Queen Is Dead. It's, according to NME, the best album of all time.
Really?
The best album of all time.
So I will tell you now.
Better than Thriller.
By fair warning. That is crazy to me.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
I'll tell you now that I know I hate Morrissey.
Oh, really? How do you know you hate Morrissey?
Because I've heard several of his songs. I was in a sketch once at Acme where a guy was doing like Morrissey being hired to do a Sweet 16 party, and so we were singing about, and the dad was really into it. The dad who hired Morrissey was really into it, and the daughter was like, "Oh, Dad, this guy sucks." And I'm like, I was having to listen to this music, and so we'll see how it goes.
But yeah, we'll see. We might both be giving this a one, but we'll see.
Let's go out on a down note.
Yeah.
So, oh Matt, I have so many movies on my very special episode list. Like I have on my list of movies to give you a bunch of them at the end that just blank and in parentheses for very special episode, and probably 10 movies on that list that, and so now that I'm faced with the prospect of this being the last very special episode movie that I give you, I don't know what I'm going to do. There is,
I have 5 minutes and 24 seconds to figure it out.
I have two movies that I have wanted to see that I have not seen. And I think I'm going to just give you the one that has the higher rating on IMDb.
Sure.
And that is the movie Whiplash. Have you heard of Whiplash?
Or seen it? Yes. No, I'm super excited for this. I've been meaning to watch it because it's about drumming.
Yes, and I thought that would be relevant to your interests. So Whiplash stars J.K. Simmons and Miles Teller. I don't know much about it other than a young drummer enrolls in a music conservatory and his mentor is a big a-hole.
Yeah,
and
he's a big jerk.
That's all I know. But it got a lot of critical attention. And this is back from, it's 2014, so it's already a 10-year-old movie, which is crazy to me. It was directed, though, by Damien Chazelle, who went on to do La La Land, which I'm not sure is a great thing. But he also did the screenplay for, another movie, which I'm not going to be able to give you, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Which is kind of it's related in the Cloverfield verse that we started.
Well, Travis, the truth is that you can text me anytime with a movie recommendation.
It's not the same, Matthew. It's not the same. All right. But yes, for next week, I'm going to give you Whiplash.
All right. Cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to that. And hey, listeners, I'm looking forward to hearing from you this week. Even if you just want to say, hey, I enjoyed the podcast. Please don't do any more of them. That's okay. I would like to hear from you. Mom, send me an email. Travis's mom, send me an email.
Yes, do that.
ExposingOurselvesPodcast@gmail.com. Or yes. Swing by the Facebook page. Just search Exposing Ourselves.
Yes, and while you're doing that, just do us a favor on the podcast app that you're listening to this on. Scroll to the bottom of our show page and do a quick rating of the podcast. And if you have the time, one or two sentences about why you like it. And we'd appreciate that very much, too.
When this podcast is discovered 5 years down the road and blows up in popularity, we'll make new episodes, and the ratings are absolutely going to help people discover it. So,
exactly. Hey, Matt?
Yes?
Thank you for exposing yourself to me.
Well, thank you for exposing yourself to me, Travis.